We're here today to talk about browsers in the enterprise.
Woohoo!
Very, very exciting stuff. And probably, I don't know what the conversations that you have, Alan. I guess who doesn't know us? We're kind of like become like the New Zealand odd couple, an American and an Aussie, talking about browsers every year for some reason in New Zealand, for reasons that no one can quite explain. We're nerds. And so it will be our take on browsers from a nerd perspective, right? So you're a group policy nerd.
I'm group policy MVP, aka nerd, absolutely. My website's grouppolicy.biz. I have lots of stuff on there about Edge and Internet Explorer and group policy, but today we're going to talk about that.
Excellent. And I'm a bit of a security nerd, also the AppCompat guy, so leading a lot of our charges to get browsers modernized. And kind of the question we want to tackle today, using our own, you know, special formula of how to think about it, is one of the big questions we get all the time about Windows 10 migrations is some variant of this, and I've seen all kinds of extremes. How do I get IE to be my default browser so it's not Edge anymore? Up to and including, how specifically do I configure AppLocker to stop Edge from ever launching? And our hope is that we can get to the point where Edge is where you start. Because the reality is today you can kind of get away with using IE as sort of your primary way of accessing the web. It does most of the things that the web has to do, but it doesn't do all of them. And over time, that delta is going to keep growing, right? Because IE is not changing anymore. IE is the compatibility solution. If we change it, we make it less compatible. And what would be the point of making your compatibility solution less compatible? So think about it. In 5 years from now, do you think that they're going to do anything new on the web in the next 5 years? Probably. 10 years? Probably. Right? And that's why we want to help build a strategy that says, let's use Edge where we can, and be really smart about it. It's been a long ride, right? If we sort of look at kind of the journey we've come to, this site is still live, by the way, and oddly enough, we're still not done retiring IE6. Are you going to just go one by one through them, or are we going to do that? It kind of is unfortunate. Maybe we can just...
Well, you can just...
Oh, no, you've got a different adapter kind. All right. Well, this is very, very interesting. Kind of blew our groove. Been a long ride. I'll actually just feed you URLs and we'll go through it. So
you tell me, I'll type.
Fair enough. So let's kind of walk through the journey. And kind of the approach we decided to take was we're going to go through the conversation we normally have with enterprise customers and think through, right, how would a nerd think about that? How would someone responsible for an enterprise think about that and come up with the guidance? So when we think about what do we need a browser to do, first and foremost, we need a browser to be a browser. The age of design for Netscape Navigator 4 and design for Internet Explorer is, you know, something we really want to put an end to. Modern sites should work with modern browsers, period. And that's important to all of us. You know, every single person. No one wants to say you have to use this site to do it. Instead, we want to be able to say, you know, this will work in general. We will differentiate on what we're doing. And it's been a really big focus. We've really changed the way we think about what we put into the browser. Because historically, it was always like, well, we're going to read the rules, and we're going to make the best implementation of the rules. And that's not how we think anymore. Now we think, well, okay, we certainly want to read the rules, and we want to think about what's happening there. But we also want to understand how other people are interpreting the rules and do a much better job of working together. Because it turns out no one is made happy when we do something differently from Chrome because we interpreted the rules differently. Nobody wins. Right, it just becomes just a little pissing match where the end user ends up being the victim. So we want to really work on that, you know, publishing what the status is. You know, we go through and tell you, hey, here's what we're planning on putting into the platform. Here's when it's coming. Here's where you can upvote it so we can gain that set session of we want to build platforms on top of this. And the progress has actually been really, really good when we look at what have we been building into the browser in terms of what matters. And you can kind of see, and this is one of Alan's favorite things to look at, is IE is a static. It's just sitting here in terms of its, you know, compatibility with, you know, ECMAScript 6, right, and what we're implementing. edge is growing, 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 and IE is forever going to stay the same, right? And if you project that down 5 years down the line, that's the kind of problem we're hoping to avoid. So our goal is to make sure things just work. And, oh, we may have a, does this actually work right now? Hold
yes.
on. Ha, ha, ha.
Technology.
No, that's yours. That's yours.
Fear us.
Hold on, we've proven that yours didn't break. We have proven that mine is still broken.
Oh, that was yours, was it?
No.
So is it not the adapter then? Is it the cable?
What page do you want?
Go to, let's switch over to 8, and we're going to, well, can I show you? From IE, we're going to go to a website that's been one of my favorite, yeah, Mockingbird, one of my favorite demos for a long time to kind of illustrate what we're trying to do in terms of the web just working. Now, I've been demonstrating this site literally since we introduced Internet Explorer 8. So if you read the actual literal text of what they put up there, which Alan has it apparently configured to be, you know, 1/10 of a point font, is they say, hey, we don't work with Internet Explorer. We're working on it. We expect to do something really, really, really soon. Right? When did we release IE8? 2008? So it's been 8 years. So their definition of soon and my definition might be different. Try a good browser. Right? Because what have they done? They've made a modern website. And what's sort of curious about this, when you look at, I'm using someone else's device, when you look at why it may not be working if it is indeed a modern website, and it turns out that it's not working because they said, hey, I have an idea. If you're IE, why don't you pretend to be IE7? You know, party like it's 2006. What are you trying to do? So they literally, they've asked themselves to be broken, what would have otherwise worked, right? This is the kind of challenge we see all the time. They're designing for modern applications. Do we think it's mine now?
Resolution.
What do you mind?
That's okay. Keep talking.
How's that? Oh, okay. Let's go from here, and where's the, oh, I open that in Edge. Why am I having a senior moment? You drive.
You want to open
it in Edge. You're just going to copy and paste it? There was an option for that somewhere. Oh, no, it's open in IE, which
yes.
is the three dots. I'm thinking it goes the other way. It doesn't.
Yes.
It ought to have. That's a feature request.
Only the Internet Explorer team was listening.
So if only they were in the room. The extension guy is in the room. But you'll notice, right, that in a modern website, like you expect, it just works. Right? And that's the intent, right? No more fiddling around, hey, which browser, right? And that is one of the challenges that we had with IE is IE, it kind of looks like one browser, doesn't it?
You're good.
And, oh, look at that. Bonus. Spectacular, sir. All right, now we can actually give demos. So the web just works, right? And that's really what we're going for, and that becomes super important for us to have something that's even viable, right? Something that works with modern applications. We're going to talk about the existing applications that are out there because it turns out that's also really, really important. Because when we think about applications, actually we'll give a little sneak preview. When we think about applications, right, it's not lost on us that's yours. This is really almost a comedy of errors. When it comes to modern applications, right, it is not, that's awesome.
Technology. We're computer guys. We're
not AV
guys.
Oh, it's a different number now. Oh, they switched me. They put me on a different cable. It is not lost on us that the average age of enterprise web applications is 12 years, average age, right? If you see some of the statistics, it's a bit staggering. So we are very mindful of that. You're not going to go and modernize every single website in the next month. It's not possible. You have too many of them, right? And there's all kinds of things that dribble off of that. We look at 50% of all software code running in the enterprise today is Visual Basic 6. 50% off of something that was deprecated in 2008. Because there's so much legacy code driving business. So we definitely want to make sure, and we'll talk about compatibility because it's really important, that we accommodate both the modern web and the web that's legacy web that's still driving your business. So we've been making some really good progress. the big area of focus that we've had is on security. We want to make sure that we're protecting against today's threats and really trying to be as innovative and thinking of new ways, because when I think of what are the two primary means of ingress for an adversary into devices in your organization, the two primary means are your email and your browser. So we need to be really smart around protecting both of them, particularly in the enterprise where the assets you have are, let's face it, probably more valuable than the assets that my mom has. Right? They may get her credit card number, right? But if you're a credit card processing company, they can get everybody's credit card number. So our goal in developing Edge was to make it truly a secure browser that is incredibly differentiated on the concept of security. And there's all kinds of ways that we're doing it. I gave a session yesterday called Windows 10 Security Internals, and we kind of highlighted Edge as really taking very significant advantage of a lot of these features. One of the areas is in containerization. How do you take a bit of code and isolate it to the maximum extent possible? So today we have that implemented. If we look at Edge, and we'll pop open Process Explorer, we can see that we have several processes. Oh, I don't want that pop up here. Let's zoom in now. Several processes in Windows. I said we were nerds, so no one should be surprised to see some internals up here. Several processes are running, right? And the content processes, Microsoft Edge CP, is a unit of isolation, and it's sitting inside of what's called an app container. You can get all kinds of details from that later. One of the things that we introduced for Anniversary Edition is the fact that we now, even if it's on the same web page, will give, not that, will give any flash that's running its own app container. So this is how you can actually find, if you want to look for, which is the process that flash is sitting in. Look for the BC host in the command line when it's open. And it is actually going to sit in a totally different app container that is private and unique for that process. So now I'm not only containerizing the web page, I'm containerizing flash within that web page. And an app container, again, details from the session from yesterday, high level, you are not going to be able to pass an access check on the system unless you actually have that app container SID in the access control list or the all application packages SID in that list. So we can start to really isolate what you can do. So even though I can get on there and potentially own that process and party with code in that process, I can't get onto your file system. I can't create something persistent. So a lot of energy going into that. We look at, you know, how do we put in other security features? Well, we make it 64-bit. You could have done this, by the way. You could have had both app containers and a 64-bit process on Internet Explorer 11. In fact, you still can today. You enable enhanced protected mode, and you'll get that. And then you'll break all your apps. And since kind of the purpose of Internet Explorer 11 is to be the compatibility solution, going and choosing the configuration that breaks all your apps may not be the world's brightest idea. So perhaps we don't do that. But you know that we can here because we don't have that. We reduced the surface area. And we did some additional work on reducing the surface area by subsetting which parts of the kernel you're even able to call into. Because that's another vulnerability. Even if we were to secure the browser perfectly, which, by the way, we can't do, right? Nobody can. But even if we were to have all of the obvious ones gotten rid of, you still had the vulnerability in the platform itself, right? Multiple layers. I can get in here and trigger something going on in win32k.sys, and now I've gotten a next elevation of privilege from the browser. So we subset. If the browser doesn't need to call this API in Windows, the browser can't call it. We instrumented it, and we said it never, ever calls this. So it will not actually be allowed to do that. We put in user mode code integrity, where only code that is digitally signed by Microsoft will ever be loaded into the process. Right? Lots and lots of additive, little, very deep, grisly, nerdy things that help to reduce the potential exposure when you're surfing the web. Super, super important. Right? And I used to always say, you know, historically, back in the Windows 7 days, if I had anything I cared about on the device, right, there's, you know, really two browsers I would use, right? I would use IE or I would use Chrome because they both implemented sandboxes. I wouldn't use Firefox. And now it is so differentiated in Edge, I would use Edge for anything that I considered even slightly risky or on any device where I had assets that I really cared about. I feel like I've been riffing for a while. Do you have any comments on your experience with the security side, Alan?
Yeah, I think it's interesting around the Flash, what you're talking about, sandboxing it. It's really like you're taking Flash and you're telling it, go sit in the corner. Right. Go
How
over
many of
there.
You would like to tell Flash to go sit in the corner?
Yeah, and then close the door or put that police tape around it and say, we'll talk to you when we want to. But it's at the moment, you can turn Flash on and off, and the users can manually turn Flash on and off in the browser. To take that to a next level, I've heard previous conferences that Microsoft are also working on ways to selectively enable Flash based on the site. So if you have an enterprise application, you just want to turn Flash on, or if you just want to turn it on for internet, I don't know quite the details of how that's going to work, but don't have things on if you don't want it to run. So that just getting the browser more secure, making Edge one of the most secure browser your users can run, right? And that's a really important thing. I think we're going to hammer home. It's just security is really Edge's big advantage in the enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, for this particular event, since I knew we had this talk, I didn't do a browser security session, but for those who really want to go through that grisly depth, there was a session from Ignite in North America that was specifically focused on browser security, 75 minutes nonstop of that for anyone who really wants to go deep. So security, obviously, really important. We've been focusing on how do we take, really the intelligent security graph that Microsoft has been building, this awareness of what's going on to detect based on behavior, to detect based on reputation whether something can run, to stop, a lot of downloads. And one such example is if you download an executable file off the web. Smart Screen will obviously take the blacklist of things that have been reported as known bad. But we started in IE9 also incorporating reputation. Because not known to be bad does not equal good. It just means no one's reported you yet. It could just mean you're brand new. So over time, you earn a reputation. And if it's not digitally signed, that reputation is based on the file hash. If it is digitally signed, the reputation is based on your signature, right? Because that way when, the new version of Adobe Reader comes out, it doesn't warn the first 100,000 people that try to download it that it's known to be bad. You can form your own opinion over whether it is known to be bad or not, right? But that's, one of the things that we're trying to do. And it's been working, right? This approach that we've had of reducing surface area, of really focusing on sandboxing, containerizing potential damage. We no longer think we can prevent it all. We assume that something's going to get through and try to minimize the damage. We have not had any known exploits of Edge in the wild. Not one so far. Right? There's been some researchers who found, certain configurations, certain things like that, but in terms of actual exposure, it's been really a phenomenal success. You can kind of see, compared to other folks, this approach has been really successful for us, right? So it ends up being really important. If I think security matters to me, then Edge is the choice. It's going to tie in with innovations that are coming into Windows 10. This makes me feel too salesy. This one is delicious, though. This is one of those really hard decisions. We announced at Ignite in North America that we were going to take this containerization concept and really bring it to the next level so that now, instead of having this process guarded by App Container and ACLs enforced by the OS, you can now put the content process in a separate micro virtual machine. So even if you gain compromise of the entire machine through your malicious code on that website, what machine do you get? This machine that does nothing but host an Edge content process and nothing else. You don't leak in to where all of your valuable digital assets are sitting. Really interesting now. Now, there are some trade-offs that you have for going down that path. If I am in a different virtual machine and the hypervisor is protecting my access to the main machine, what kind of things can I no longer do? Right-click, save picture. Different virtual machine now. I can't get there. Right? So if I'm thinking, hey, I'm a general purpose browsing, that may not work. But high security scenarios, really interesting. Over time, does that change? Does the story change? Do we evolve it? Yep, no doubt that will happen, right? But a really powerful container. And this is the path we're going down, is really trying to innovate on how do we further secure, further isolate, and provide an unparalleled browser experience in terms of security.
To me, that sounds like the promise that I've heard for many years from a, I don't know if you guys in the audience have, virtualization as the way of the future for, you know, containerizing apps. And it's like, we're now actually seeing Edge is going to be in a virtual sandbox, and it's actually coming to fruition. And it's just like that I've heard in other sessions. I think it was your session yesterday. The hypervisor or virtualization is a barrier. If you can break out of that, that's really bad for things like Azure. Think about, you know, your guest machines on your Hyper-V and your virtual platform don't break out through the hypervisor because it's a virtualization layer. And it's almost the same level of security that you're getting as a guest virtual machine, but you're running it within your own computer. So it really is an excellent security defense mechanism for that malicious software.
Yeah, and it continues to be informed. I think, I mean, you even noticed this yesterday. I mean, so I don't work on the browser engineering team, right? I work in the field, I work directly with customers. And I have never before seen the browser team as interested and engaged in collecting all of the feedback that they can from everyone. Like, in fact, even yesterday, Alan experienced this, where he's like, oh, you work in the browser team? Can I talk to you? And they're like, oh my God, yes.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And that goes to Microsoft, actually. I know it's a browser session, but Microsoft in general. And the Insider program. The number of times I've heard people say, you know, Microsoft people say, oh, just make sure it's on Windows Insider. And you think, yeah, it's just going into a black box and no one sees it. No, Microsoft looks at that Windows Insider feedback so intensely. They have to review all those submissions and evaluate them. It's really the core of getting any feedback in, not only just about the browser, but anything. It's not a black box. It's not a bottomless pit. It doesn't go nowhere. People are reading it. And they really do take on board that. And over the last 12, 18 months, it's just been amazing. As a group policy MVP, we might have made some suggestions about browsers. And sure enough, the next version of the old operating system that comes out, hey, there it is. Maybe it was us suggesting it. Maybe it was just reinforcing their behavior. But that Microsoft are listening, that's for sure. And security is obviously a big thing that they're listening for and looking out for.
Cool. So the third tenet, and we're actually, you know, we're going to spend really the majority of our time talking about compatibility and manageability, right? But I do want to kind of cover the whole message, because I think all of these components matter when making your choice of what's the right browser. One of them, is it fast, right? Is it fast? Does it get the right performance? And, you know, certainly this has been a really big focus for us. You know, you have all the numbers, all the competitions, right? At some level, everyone cares about it, because if you get someone who's really passionate about a browser, whatever browser it is, they're going to find whatever benchmark makes it seem like it must be a slam dunk decision, right? It's never a slam dunk decision. This stuff is hard. I need to think about compatibility. I need to think about features. I need to think about, you know, what are the other side effects of the choice that I make, and what are my vendors going to provide, what are my users going to be using at home. There's all kinds of different configurations. But our focus is, obviously, we want to be really fast, and we want to make sure we differentiate on things like battery life. This was kind of one of the fun demos that we put out on the web and said, hey, we'll just sort of start browsing and start timing until the battery dies out, and a bunch of laptops have the same thing. There was a little bit of fun back and forth on this. I think we had won, you know, hands down the first time, and then Google came out with some build, and then they won one more time, and then we said, oh, okay, hold on, and we put our new one in and won again. A little bit fun. The net result is, with this little bit of competitive flair, if you're running on battery power, you win, right? Because historically, who thought about browsing in batteries?
It's good competition in the browser industry. It's like, you know, Edge is really pushing the rest of the industry, saying, hey, come on, guys. Browser is important. And they've actually stood up, and it's like, well, yeah, we're good in battery life as well. So it's like anything. It's like someone will win. It's always edging ahead. It's just like the HTML5 race, right? Now it's the battery power race, all right? And the stronger the competition in the market, the better it is for everyone. But you should always go back to Edge. Edge always wins, yeah.
Yeah, we try to be more productive. I have my own habits already, right? You know, they made a big splash about, you know, annotating web pages. I actually don't honestly know a whole lot of people who personally do this, but I think a lot of it's because of habit, because it's never been doable before, so I don't think anyone's built new habits. Executives I know do it. I know execs do it, but I've not seen a lot of actual information workers doing annotations.
Some
so
sort
far.
Of big tabletop surface computer.
Some kind of tabletop
that I could use in my studio and do annotation on with a pen. Did everyone see that? Microsoft announced the Surface Studio today, which is basically this humongous tabletop Surface
computer.
Well,
it's not a tabletop. I think it's like I haven't seen the size on it yet.
It's We diverge. But here you go. For the benefit of the people on the recording, my hands are at about the width of my body, and I have a very wide body. And that's about how wide the actual device is. It actually looks quite big. I don't know if there's a range of sizes or anything. I've just seen a video. But it basically can go upright, and then you can actually pivot down and go almost completely flat, and you can use it almost as a piece of paper and write on it. So some very interesting hardware being released by Microsoft. And Edge is the best browser for that hardware, and that's why you're in this session.
What a shill. So reading mode, of course, that's kind of the default in there, basically the piss off the advertisers mode. But as a security person, the advertising-funded model is one that I wish we could start to diverge from, right? Everything shouldn't be free. It costs money to make it. Integration with Cortana, which has actually started to pop up a bit for me. It's always interesting as you watch the features light up. You'll be on a restaurant and be like, hey, you want to make a reservation for you? I'm like, that's actually useful, right? And those kind of innovations that are coming, and that's what's neat with being on a platform, right, that doesn't have to rev the way that Internet Explorer historically revved, which is, oh, we got to wait for the next, release. Initially it was of Windows, and then it kind of got separated from Windows, but it was still a year, 2 years at a time. Now we can wait a couple months, get the next insider build, and start to get some of this functionality and capability built in. We have extensions. So a couple of bits of feedback that I've gotten, right, was actual personal rejection. And I'll be really candid with you. One of the challenges we had within Microsoft was that we didn't have a lot of internal adoption of Edge. And it's really hard for us to be telling our customers and our clients that they should be using Edge when we ourselves aren't. And so we started to really research, like, what is it that's stopping us? And certainly from an external customer standpoint, everyone's like, I need my ad blocker, I need my LastPass, I need all this key stuff that was truly going to be a blocker for me. The other thing that, interestingly enough, that I heard was favorites management was really a challenge. And I've had to introduce to people, oh, you've gone to sleep. There we go. All right, now it's back up. I've had to point out to folks, like here are the favorites, that we actually added this sort by name. We added that. Like, people didn't even notice it. Because it's one of the interesting challenges of being at Microsoft is that we're running builds since back when it was called Project Spartan. Back before it is even called Edge, right? And let's be honest, Project Spartan as a web browser really sucked. Right? So everyone's like, oh, this is terrible, I can't use it for anything. And they kind of never switch back. They set the default, and they let it, the default ride basically forever. So we have right-click sort by name, right? We have that capability. You can drag and drop things around. We've been working on addressing some of that feedback, but extensions was a big one that we had to build the platform. And when thinking about the platform, we said, it is really important that we make it as familiar as possible to developers. So we said, rather than coming up with a whole new way of doing extensions, right, because that's the one area right now where there are no standards. Your Chrome extensions are different from your Firefox extensions, which are different from your IE extensions, aka ActiveX controls and BHOs and all that. All of them are different, right? There's only so much effort you're going to put in place. Can we make that look the same? Can we start to drive that? So really driving consistency across implementation. When is the extensions talk? That's later today? At 11:40, you'll get to hear a talk right next door from one of the program managers who works on the extension team to kind of talk about how to build them. If you're not a developer, is this still interesting if you're not a developer, or probably not? More developer focused. At least you can kind of see what the capabilities are. This is something that's been really important to us, is making sure we build this platform and build it right.
Who here thinks extensions was a big deal breaker with Edge when it first came out, not having extensions? Yeah, lots of hands. And who here has now actually started using Edge because of, hey, there's an extension there. That was my required extension that I had to have. LastPass was for me. Yeah, a few hands there. Yeah, and look, there's not that many extensions in the marketplace at the moment, but they're coming, right? But there's a very high standard of quality, which is really unusual for browser extensions to have a high standard of quality. So it's a real challenge. Do you let the crap in, or have to vet all those extensions before they actually get in? And if you want your browser to be secure, there's no point in letting in extensions that aren't going to be secure. So
yeah, well, that's sort of and as a security nerd, right? My thought is, all right, so you're telling me you're waiting to adopt a browser until you have this opt-in man-in-the-middle attack mechanism for all of your websites. Yes, because Pinterest is that hard to get to otherwise. So I always find that a bit interesting, but certainly I absolutely get that was important, and that was something that we tried to reach. And finally, you know, and this is really kind of the meat and potatoes of the talk, because I think this is important. All these other things are, we've got a minimum bar that we need to meet. You've got to have a site that works with the content that's out there, or a browser that works. You've got to have a browser that's secure. You've got to have a browser that's productive. That's table stakes, right? Now the question is, if I'm going to choose this in my organization, I need to make sure that it meets all of the other requirements, right? It can be a browser. What are the other requirements that I have? Number one, it has to work with the sites that I have, not just modern sites, but everything. And second, I have to be able to manage it and implement the controls that matter to my organization. Right? So we'll kind of talk about Compat first, right? And I'll tee it over to you, Alan, to kind of talk about how we address compatibility and implement that when we think about taking the legacy estate you have and building it out such that you can use Edge for all modern content, but still get to IE every single time you need it.
In the enterprise.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's important in the enterprise, of course, that your browser is secure and compatible, but also manageable. All right, so, and that's what I'm going to do now. We're going to change gears here. Less PowerPoint, yay, more demos. Okay, so we're changing into the demo phase. This is the stuff that I do every day, okay? Chris talks about the compatibility. I talk about, well, what do I do now? How do I actually implement this in my organization? You know, I love coming to these shows and showing you the golden nuggets, the things you can do straight away. If you've got Windows 10 deployed in your organization, this is stuff that you're going to be able to do straight away. So a little bit of history. So when Windows 10 first came out, Edge was obviously the browser in the operating system. And there were some air quotes, group policy that you could actually implement using Edge. So here we have the group policy settings here. This was it. Oh, that's not what I wanted to do. Yeah, that was it. This is it, yeah. All right. So there was things there about smart screen. There was things there about, you know, how to treat pop-up cookies, enterprise mode, site list, and a few settings there. But things that were missing was, does anyone think of a key group policy setting there, not security related, that might be missing from the original version of Edge group policies? Homepage, who said that? Okay, have a lolly, and I can't throw. Throw it back. No, I'm going to blame wind resistance on that. Anyone else?
There is air in the room. He wasn't expecting that.
Yes. Anyone else closer? You can tell me another group policy setting that was missing.
Disabling it completely? No. Well, we're half an hour
actually,
into it now.
No. Look. Send all internet traffic over to Internet Explorer. But kind of, yeah. No. Another one was the ability to configure favorites. But also, it's just generally lacking. And of course, it was a V1 browser or V12, 13, whatever. The version number.
Well,
it was
actually,
the first
can I comment on the motivation behind that, though?
Yes, absolutely.
So the motivation behind that, we had a lot of really tough discussions on this because true statistic, about a third of the support cases that came in about the browser were triggered by the specific configuration of that customer. If you ran it in IE in this default configuration, you didn't reproduce the issue because there's so many different possible permutations. And sort of when I tried to look at this number and tried to figure out exactly what that meant, I did the math to determine how many different permutations do you have to Internet Explorer group policy. And it turns out it doesn't actually even fit on one page. I got to scroll a little bit to get it. And I said, all right, that seems like kind of a lot. Shockingly, we don't have this many test cases. And even if we did, were we to run every single test case in an elapsed time of 1 nanosecond, not enough nanoseconds have elapsed since the beginning of time for us to have run all of these. So it becomes really hard. By way of comparison, this is the number of atoms in the observable universe, to give you a sense of scale. And so we're really very serious. We're like, we can't just have this massive explosion of, here are 9 million ways to shoot yourself in the foot, or I don't even know what number that is, but certainly more than 9 million.
Three.
These are all the different ways that you can just end yourself in some permutation where nobody else has ever before seen that particular configuration. No one knows what it's like, while still giving you that power. To give a preview, and Alan will keep going forward, but this is the actual number of permutations that you have in edge group policies today. So certainly, you know, it's smaller than the number of atoms in the observable universe, so good on us. But we've been very strategic. We need to get the right controls in place, but rather than make you go and twiddle three policies to implement one actual scenario, to implement one policy for the one scenario and make it so that we separate as much impact and blowback and unintended consequences as we possibly can. So we've been deliberate, and we get that sometimes you're like, how is that not there yet? How did you move backwards? And we move backwards in some ways, honestly, because we needed to move forward. We needed to simplify, consolidate, and make it more manageable. So that's some of the explanation behind why you're like, well, why weren't those there in the beginning? You already had the code, obviously, and it's because the old way wasn't working.
Okay, so the scenario here is I've got my Windows Server 2012 R2 domain controller, but I have Windows 10 in my organization, and I want to be able to enable all those nice new edge policies that Microsoft have actually just recently released since the RTM. In 15.11, when they released that, they actually released an updated ADMX file with new group policy settings as well. We're going to skip over that, though, but there was an intermediate step there because they're always adding more settings. So how do you get the new settings? Well, one normally just goes to the operating system drive of the latest operating system ever released, which is Windows Server 2016, which has now been released. Okay, and you go to the C Windows folder, and you go to the Policy Definitions folder, and you look up the Microsoft Edge ADMX file, which isn't there. So the reason that it's not there is because Windows Server 2016 doesn't have Edge in the operating system, so they didn't provide the Microsoft Edge ADMX files for the latest version of the Edge browser. So where do you get it from? What you need to do is you actually need to go to the C Policy Definitions folder of a Windows 10 1607 machine. And if you go to the C Windows directory there and go to Policy Definitions, and we look up Microsoft Edge, yay, I've got the Microsoft Edge ADMX files right there. So I can now copy those. I'll copy the ADMX. Oh, there's one I created earlier. And of course, we need the language pack as well, Microsoft Edge. To the desktop and replace, yes. All right, so now I'm just going to go, and I'm on my Server 2012 R2 domain controller here. I'm simply going to go to Policy Definitions folder. I'm going to copy the ADMX file. No, you can't drag and drop. You have to go copy, paste. And then I'm going to copy my ADMXL file. So the policy definitions folder, if you're not a group policy expert, is a central repository of all the definitions of the group policy settings you have in your organization. So I've now updated the policy definitions with the right Microsoft Edge ADMX files. So if I now open that same group policy, I think it was this one. Just making sure that's okay. Edit that. Policies. In templates, Windows, and if I now go to Microsoft Edge, I have a whole bunch more settings there. Not a whole lot more. Basically, this has just been listening from feedback from the community, like group policy settings there that you need for your organization. But most importantly, configure home page. I can now configure my home page for the users. Everyone's favorite web search engine. And I can also configure Internet Explorer, not Internet Explorer, Edge favorites. Okay, so by configuring these favorites, though, you now can control what's in the user's Edge. So to me, that for an enterprise, these were the two core user configurable settings, the user-facing settings that had to be configured for Edge. Previously, these weren't configurable easily via group policy, so I can now configure those settings with the new Edge group policy settings. In 15.11, you could configure the home page of Windows 10, but it was only a machine policy, which means you could only apply one home page per computer, which was a bit So now that they've actually been able to move, they've moved that into the user configuration. All right, but we want to control compatibility of Edge in the enterprise. So we have a user here on this machine. They have Edge and they have IE pinned to their taskbar. And for the purposes of this demo, we have a really old intranet page called Really Old Intranet. And we have a really new intranet page called Really New Intranet. Let's just use our imagination here. Sorry, I'm not very good at actually coding HTML that breaks. But we'll go back to the...
Or that works, let's be fair.
Well, it's great. It's got a gray background. It works. It loads. So what I want to do is actually put the really old intranet page into enterprise mode. So let's just say there's some sort of compatibility issue with this web page that I want to load it in IE8 mode. So how do I do that? So I have the Enterprise Mode Site List Manager tool, which is a free tool available from Microsoft, funnily enough, that allows you to actually configure the websites that should load in enterprise mode, example IE8 mode or IE9 mode or whatever document mode you want. And this is a V2. So since last year, they've actually updated the schema of the actual XML file that's published, pushed out. It used to be that it would only work in Windows 10, but they've since backported the fact that the V2 schema will now work in Windows 7 or later. So you can just upgrade your current schema. If you already have this deployed, you can just import a V1 file and it'll just import it and save it as an XML file, the V2 schema. But what I'm going to do...
I'll comment briefly on that while you're typing that in. So a couple of goals that we had in the upgrade to the V2 schema. One primary one was to make sure that we had XML that, to the maximum extent possible, was human readable. Because the old schema, you can kind of see, kind of grew over time. So you would have, a lot of double negatives, right? So, disable equals false in order to get something enabled. It was fairly difficult to read and process as a human, so that was part of it. And to some extent, we had a lot of organizations that had to defer to manual XML editing. Because while this tool makes it really, really convenient for creating, quick and dirty composing of these files, it has some scalability issues. Like, we've actually tested enterprise mode configurations up to about 20,000 entries. I've worked with customers who've driven up to around 40,000. From a general guidance perspective of how big should it be or should it not be, ideally, it's one entry for one unit of upgrade. Right? So if I go and buy a new version of this application, right, that I should be able to remove one entry and have that boo on there. This, in essence, is a to-do list to move forward. When it starts getting really big, this tool stops having the ability to handle it, because what it's doing is it's creating an in-memory DOM. That's how it's manipulating the XML. So the entire thing has to fit in memory. So unless you have a really, really large amount of memory, when you're working with files that big, you can sometimes exhaust the capability of the tool, and then it will indicate that it has been exhausted by crashing, which is helpful. But that's the reason why, is we want to make sure that you can edit it in a human-readable way.
So that V2 file is configurable by a group policy. Here we got use enterprise mode, i.e. website list here. And all I'm basically done is in the enterprise mode tool, I exported that as an XML file. And I've just saved it here. I don't recommend that you save it to your domain controller, but for the purposes of this demonstration, I have. And I've just specified the URL there. Okay, I hit OK. That was already configured, but the file didn't actually have any values in it. So what I'm going to do is do a GP update, just to be sure. I'm going to open up this HTML. HTTP debugging tool called Fiddler, which is going to basically intercept all the. It's basically man in the middle. So I'm going to open up Edge, and what Edge initially does is it hasn't actually loaded this website. It hasn't actually loaded this website in enterprise mode yet. So what happens is if, of course, you had every machine in your organization, every time you open a browser, the first thing in the morning it hits a file, the first thing it does, it's going to slow the opening of that browser up. So what they have done is that after 60 seconds or approximately 60 seconds of the browser opening up, it starts contacting for the enterprise mode site list compatibility views. Not only does it contact the ones internally that you've configured, but as you can see there, if we just zoom in, it's also contacted the ones externally. All right, so they're the Microsoft compatibility site list. So hopefully in about 20 seconds after I do a bit of a dance to Phil, we'll actually see that it actually downloads the compatibility site list file. 7 more seconds. So hopefully, praying, this will actually work.
Yeah, so while we do that, I think one important point we also want to make sure is clear is that there are different policies for this for both IE and Edge. So I'm guessing most people, hopefully most people have already made the transition to at least IE 11. Is there anyone who's still on an older version of IE? Anyone who's, oh, a couple folks, yeah. And is there anyone who didn't have to use the enterprise mode site list at all? Like they just, all their stuff worked or they upgraded all of it? Okay, so a couple people who were able to get through. But for a lot of people who are familiar with this, the differences come in Windows 10 because now you have, hey, which browser should I use? And there's a couple of different policies for that. So I think that's, we're still waiting for that to come through.
I'm having a demo file here.
Okay, well, we'll just move on.
Okay.
At least it's not just me having demo fails.
Yes, this is true. All right. I'll just let that sit in the background there. I might just do one more group policy update, close that, and then I'll go back and configure it. Hopefully it will refresh in the background. Sorry about this. Okay. So what I'm going to just go back now is actually look at some of the other features. So one of the other features that has been added to Edge is this is the Internet Explorer, is the policy settings. Is we can configure the Enterprise Mode Site List Manager. There is an option here to send all intranet sites to Internet Explorer 11 in Edge. So this is a really good starting point in your organization if you just want to have Edge in your organization and it's like you. It's just a lot of work to figure out the compatibility list. If we actually configure this, I am editing the right group, yep, and which is basically enabling all the sites that you have in your organization that are configured as intranet sites, which is sometimes, you know, automatic or you've probably crafted your intranet sites, will actually open by default in Internet Explorer 11. So if we go back to the computer, still hasn't updated. So the policy that I just set was an Edge policy. And then before there, I was trying to configure an IE policy. Basically, what we should have seen is it actually would have downloaded the compatibility list. But what we do here in Edge, and that is because Fiddler is kind of in the way. So I will open this. So I don't have internet on here anyway. But what I want to do is go to the internet. Right, which is my internet page. Okay, but then I want to go to the intranet. All right, now the intranet is actually defined, bang, as an intranet website. So now I've got my Edge browser, which I can surf for basically your HTML5 leading web standards browsers, internet basically. And then when the user wants to go back, they type in their intranet homepage and they want to go back to the intranet, Edge will now send them back to IE. Now, this is a very much all or nothing sort of strategy, right? This doesn't this is really only to be act as your first step, all right? But then, if I want to click here, what I can do is go back to. I can now go back to Internet Explorer and do something very similar, but in reverse. So, Internet Explorer. Okay. Send all sites not included in the Enterprise Mode site list to Microsoft Edge. So this is another thing that you can do. It basically, if you have Internet Explorer and you know and you've done a well-defined definition of all your Enterprise Mode sites, you know what sites you need to open in IE. Great. Well, then send everything else to Edge. Right, you have a very secure web browser that supports modern web standards. So what you can do is you can enable this option, and then anything that's not on the Enterprise Mode site list will actually No, and the reason that's not working is for some reason it's not downloading the XML file. Sorry, some.
So while you're sort of getting that updated, I think that's a really tough decision because we do have an easy button. The easy button is, hey, put everything in IE that's local, and that does make it easy, but there is some unintended consequences of that. It means that everything developed internally, everything that zones to the local intranet zone, is going to be capped at what IE 11 can do today. And again, that's mostly fine today, but it's getting worse and is going to continue to get worse as you lose capabilities. So when you think about your device's strategy, while we certainly would like to believe that no one in this audience would ever own a device that wasn't running Windows, we suspect that might not be true. Right? And those things may have browsers that are not Internet Explorer. So you start to cap your own ability to develop sites unless you take least common denominator approaches. Let's not use anything that isn't supported up in a browser that was authored a few years ago. Let's just not just ignore all of the web that evolved since then. Is I'm going to effectively put a cap on things by putting that in there. That's why, in general, we find that the approach of, hey, here's a list. The list can be plenty big. Like I said, 40,000 sites we've seen. Here's all the stuff. We're going to still be using IE for most everything, but it's specifically enumerated. Not on this list, bounce to Edge and leverage it that way. So even internal sites are going to do it. Another thing to keep in mind in terms of those internal sites and how you configure with enterprise mode site list is that one of the decisions we made in developing that, the enterprise mode site list is the final authority. So when you kind of think through what's going to decide how it's going to work, option number one is we'll take a look at the page, right? And, you know, does it have a doc mode? Does it not? Is it in this zone? Is it in that zone? There's all these sort of heuristics that are built in and configurable that decide, hey, what mode are you going to render in? Are you going to default to compatibility view, which is either IE7 docket mode or IE5 docket mode? So pretend it's 1999 or pretend it's 2006, take your pick. Will be the default for internal sites. For external, it's default to the most modern zones that IE itself has. That's where we start. The developer can overrule that by putting in an XUA compatible tag. And the IT pro can overrule that by putting in the enterprise mode site list. So they get the ultimate authority as the IT administrator. But let's say you have a site that you are going in and upgrading. So right now, you're saying, OK, I need to run it in IE and in IE9 mode, for example, right? Because I developed it back in 1999, which I can do. Then they upgrade it. They say, now it works great in Edge, works great in Chrome, works great in, you know, all the other browsers that matter to me, Safari on iPads, you know, whatever the case may be. We've updated so it works on everything. Now I have to deploy in lockstep because I deployed the new website. The group policies are still going to force me back to IE9 mode, where it may not work if it's leveraging really modern web technology. So I need to both deploy it and then roll back my group policy to remove it from the enterprise mode site list and make sure that those happen in lockstep, that they happen as an atomic operation, because it will overrule it. So we definitely want to make sure that we're doing that manageability and we have the ability to collaborate with our development organizations to pull them off when they're ready and have a really good process for doing that. We ready here?
Yes.
That does not sound, oh, look at that.
So I'm just doing some, oh, look, okay. Oh. Maybe that was enough to trigger it. Hang on, let's try. Yay. Okay, so there it is here. I think that was it in the background. I'll claim it is in the background. So here, the browser then downloaded the enterprise mode site list. I think I actually mistyped the URL. And basically what it's done is it's pulled down that enterprise mode site list. So now, hey, look at that. Okay, cool. So what we have here now is we have Internet Explorer loading. It's using IE8. And then when I click on the new internet, and then I'm going to just go, Fiddler's just probably causing more trouble than it's worth. So let me just... the really new intranet. Where did you go today? I went to Ignite, and it was great, bro. And then we have the internet too, but then if I'm on the really new intranet, hopefully when I click on the old internet, it sends me back to the Internet Explorer. Okay, yay, it worked. So what have I demonstrated here? I've demonstrated the ability to basically take the users from IE when you need it, send them to Edge when you can use Edge, and then when they need to go back to IE, it seamlessly goes back to IE. All right? So the users don't go, which was what previous problem was challenge, not problem, with this was that you would go from IE, you'd get sent to Edge, and then once they're in Edge, the users would type in the intranet page and it would try to load the intranet in their Edge browser. It wouldn't send them back. So we now have the full life cycle of being able to send users to the internet and back. All right. So now what you've been able to do, what I've hopefully, sorry for demo fails, been able to do is demonstrate you can now have Edge in your organization, the most secure browser, I claim the most secure browser users can have that supports modern web standards, but then when you need to, you can send them back to Internet Explorer for compatibility reasons. Hopefully over time, the users don't really know that they're doing this to them. To them, it's just like, oh, it's another browser. You might have also noticed that one of the annoying things that was removed is that when they used to do this, the browser actually used to tell the user, hey, I'm sending you to the other browser. Click here to continue. And that's even gone. Okay, so it's as seamless as possible. It's Microsoft listening to the feedback of the customers and making basically it's the best damn browser combination you can have, you know, on any platform. You've got the best of both worlds. So I really hope that at least starts you thinking about, hey, Edge, great browser. I can start giving it to my users. I can get rid of other third-party browsers. And the other thing you've got to remember is if you're getting rid of other third-party browsers, you don't have to think about third-party ways to patch those browsers, or you're not patching those browsers on the other third party's, you know, schedule. All right? You can control it. You can contest the rollout in an enterprise organization, the patching of your browsers. And it's a single patch strategy. You're using the same patch mechanism for Edge as you are for IE. So that's reducing your administrative workload, it's giving the users a secure browser, which hopefully makes your organization more secure, and it's giving them the web standards that they want to be able to load. The users want to be able to load, you know, recent web standards on the internet, but they can also still do their work in the corporation, right? And that's really the key takeaway, is that the Edge is evolving, it's becoming a much better browser for your enterprise and your organization. But it's not the only browser, you know, they still have the compatibility there with IE 11.
Yeah, and before we move away from sort of demo failures as an opportunity for learning, no, it really is. So we had a demo failure in Ignite North America. It was because, and you've sort of seen them do this, right? When you open the browser, it's going to wait about 70 seconds or so before downloading the new site list, so it's not on the startup path. And that's by design. There's all kinds of things that are deferred and delayed as we go, so that you don't really have to just sit and waiting for your browser to pop open. You can overrule that for IE. You can take the registry key that encapsulates the current number. If you whack it, we'll immediately go grab it.
Now you tell me.
I have a PowerShell script that's on my blog, which you ought to be reading, Alan, that will actually let you do that, which is helpful for testing, because now you're not launching and waiting 70 seconds every single time. You can reclaim those 70 seconds of your life. So I have the post that's here's how you overrule it for local, because if I'm in the lab environment, it's nice to say, hey, point to this XML file on my desktop, right, and then whack the key so I immediately download it so I can do testing. That's helpful for me in particular because Microsoft uses a compat view list as well for our internal sites, which means in essence I'm overruling our group policy in order to do my testing. So every single time group policy refreshes, it reclobbers the key, drops the Microsoft one on, and I have to reclobber it, which is why I made it in PowerShell. So you can accelerate that. But one thing I discovered at Ignite North America is that Edge doesn't look at the presence or absence of that key as to whether or not it should immediately refresh. It always waits 70 seconds. So when you're waiting for the list to come into Edge, wait the 70 seconds, particularly if you're giving a demo on stage in front of hundreds of people. But definitely, you start to learn some of the quirks and ins and outs and tips and tricks, and that's, you know, I tend to share those on my blog to help accelerate that. But I totally agree. It's like, you know, our thought is we really want to have a great browser experience. I'll actually diverge, oddly, as the Microsoft guy, I'll diverge. I don't care if you as an individual want to use multiple browsers. I do. What we don't want is for end users to have to remember which browser to use for which app, because that's called an externality and it sucks. So we don't want that to happen. If you happen to like this browser and it happens to work with your content, awesome. That's great. That's the beautiful thing about choice. But you shouldn't make your users do that and go, oh, yeah, you're not using Chrome for that one. That's why it's not working. You're like, why? I have to remember all that? Really? Right? That's what's not fair to end users. We want to make it so that all of your content can work in every modern browser on every device, and that's really important to us, and it's really, really important to users. So with that, I think, you know, we kind of summarize up, you know, on the compatibility side, you know, we provide a mechanism to get there, make it really, really easy. I'll comment from a consumer perspective is in the enterprise, we now don't have this intermediary page that says, hey, do you want this site to work? Yes or no?
But there's a policy to put it back if you want to annoy your users.
You can, yes. We've actually gotten some feedback of, this is a bit scornful of people who've written old, hey, you're using some old stuff, and here's a picture of a 1970s television with rabbit ears. But I think that was kind of the point. You know, overall, it's that really is, you know, hey, let's try and build a great experience overall. And we think particularly in the enterprise, you know, we're able to achieve a lot of the objectives that really matter. So hopefully we've managed to persuade you, to give you the information so that you can really go back and think, you know what, I am going to do an edge-first, i.e. default strategy, but also one that can be mindful of the entire ecosystem and everything, and just think, modern browser where I need modern, and IE to get me over the hump. Thank you very much.
Thank you.